Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hi, welcome to another episode of Serious Issues, a Weekly Comic Book Podcast, coming to you for the last time ever from our birthplace, which is King's Comics on Pitt Street in Sydney.
Yeah, I was literally born here.
Yep, and you literally gave birth here too.
Yep.
As we just discussed.
Yeah.
So King's Comics has been in this location for how many years?
16 years.
16 years. It's the only place I've known King's Comics to be.
Same.
Even though it's been in other places but before that. King's Comics has been where we've recorded 80% of the episodes of Serious Issues in their beautiful, pristine office space out the back. And I got here today, and it's empty. All the comics have been taken off the shelves.
Yeah,
I can't believe how well moved out you are.
Yeah, the King's team are experts at like packing and unpacking books for conventions. So it got done.
Just general, like putting things in little sleeves and then
bigger
boxes and then stacking the little boxes in other boxes.
We love organization and organizing a bookshelf and...
So our parents at King's Comics are moving to where, Siobhan?
403 George Street.
Cool. Now
opposite Dimmicks.
Look forward to about 18 months of me getting that address wrong.
Yeah, it took me so long to remember the address when I first started.
403 George Street, Sydney. It's pretty close.
It's not that bad.
It's closer to Wynyard Station than it is Town Hall Station for those visiting Sydney. We'll be recording there, hopefully, if there's room for us to record in the future.
I don't know where, but it's going
to
be funny.
This is the farewell episode to Pitt Street, King's Comics Pitt Street.
Yeah.
We're having one last mint slice while we record. The saddest
genuinely,
Vicky of all time.
Like, it's a bit pathetic, but like I started working here when I was 17 and I have like... met my partner and like had a baby in that time and all this stuff, and I'm like, ooh, my second home is gone. Bit pathetic.
No, it's just a fucking comic book story. What is this place gonna become?
I don't know. They're like knocking it down. Apparently it's gonna be like a mezzanine level for like tradies or something to get changed.
It's going to become one of those interim things so other people can hang out here while they build something else.
Yes, I think so.
That's always like the biggest insult when your house gets knocked down so that it can be where tradies
like porta potties
to build roads.
Yeah. The biggest insult.
Fuck roads. Anyway, my name's Levins.
My name is Siobhan.
Every week on this comic book podcast, we review all the comic books that came out last week. You're going to hear hammering in the background. Things being moved around. It's going to be a bit of a funny episode. We might try and burn through all these comics.
Yeah.
Literally, we've got a flamethrower. We're going to bring a torch to them.
Yep, absolutely.
We begin every episode of Serious Issues by going through all the new number ones, all the new series that started last week. Usually I have some form of order. Fuck it. I just want to talk about one I liked the most.
Yes, please.
That's Bordertown.
Yes.
So Vertigo, Siobhan, it's been around.
Who are they?
It's been around for twice as long as King's Comics has been at Pitt Street.
Wow.
Around, I would say so, 32-ish years,
I don't really know.
Maybe longer. It's an 80s comic book imprint started by DC, where things were allowed to get a little bit weird, a little bit dark.
A little bit spooky.
Most famous for giving us titles like The Sandman, and then
Hellblazer.
Preacher, and then Why the Last Man. It became kind of like DC Comics' almost indie imprint that gave us the first kind of big stories from a lot of creators that we love today.
Grown-up stories for grown-ups.
Every year there's speculation. This is going to be the last year for Vertigo. Vertigo is going to die, but there was a recent campaign from Vertigo themselves, and they're putting out, I think it's like 12 new titles over the next year.
And they're back, baby.
This is one of the first ones, if not the first one. I can't remember if we've missed. I
guess other than like the Sandman books.
The Sandman stuff is back too. Yeah, sure. So this is a book called Border Town. It is by a writer that I'm not familiar with and an artist that I love and a colorist that I also love.
Yes.
Eric M. Esquivel. Definitely, that's an
acronym. I love it.
Esquivel?
I'm fucking, who knows, mate?
Let us know, Eric M. Wrote this one, and he is joined by Ramon Villalobos, who we last saw and loved on the Black Hawk. What's his name?
Yeah, I was trying really hard to think of what his name
Nighthawk.
Is. Nighthawk. There you go. You did.
Oh,
Black
God,
Hawk.
No.
You racist. You fucking racist, mate.
His costume's black, I swear. and Tamara Bonvillain, who is he's often a collaborator. She works with Ramon on, I think they even share a studio space.
Oh, cool.
Because I've read interviews with either of them, and Ramon often interrupts Tamara's interviews. He sounds pretty great.
Yeah.
Border Town is a new fun series from Vertigo that kind of explains, like, you know, it's a high school drama that...
It's like a politically charged high school drama / monster thing.
Where we have someone who is half Mexican, although, you know, looks white, so everyone treats him with the privilege that comes with that, starting a new school, because he's white, he's immediately befriended by a white power.
White supremacist.
White supremacist dickhead. And then there's like, I don't know, there's this brilliant kind of like teenage kind of high school dynamic of him trying to prove himself to the right people and be the right person to the right people. And all the while this is going on, there's all this insane supernatural monster shit.
Happening in the background. People getting eaten by police, etc.
Yeah, and this was just like a ton of fun.
So fun, and like action packed, and like incredible character design, and all that stuff. Ramon Villalobos is so good.
Yeah, it was so
love
good
seeing
to see
him on interiors.
Yeah, and doing something so insane, because I thought like when it was like, oh, he's doing one called Border Town, I was like, oh, I guess this will be, you know, be cool seeing him doing like a kind of politically charged high school book, and then finding out that there was like monsters and supernatural crap.
You're like, yes.
So on board. It's so great. He does some incredible stuff, beautifully colored by Tamara. And the writing for someone that, as far as I know, I mean, I've not read anything by Eric M. But
Esquivel.
Esquivel? Esquivel? Esquivel. It's Esquivel. I'm going to go out there. Esquivel. Eric M. Esquivel. I thought this was like brilliantly written and paced for a new to me comic book writer.
Absolutely.
Anyway, yeah.
Funny, smart. Gorgeous.
I love this.
Everyone should be reading this. And like that like final page reveal of who the big bad guy is so good. That's such a like brilliant redesign or character design.
It looks like someone straight out of Maestro's.
Yeah, absolutely.
Steve Gross book that we got recently, which is an incredible compliment. But also, you know, Villalobos is already one of my favorite artists that we don't get work from as often as I'd like.
Yep,
but
absolutely.
Now that they've got this book coming out every month, I'm very, very excited. Pick it up, everybody. Border
Town.
I love this. Yeah, this is...
Probably my favorite comic of the week.
Yeah, me too. There you go. Let's just call it.
Yep,
every
done.
Every other
episode
comic
over.
We talked about this week. No, there's some good stuff coming up, I swear to God. Totally. So let's, I guess that was published by DC. Are there any other DC number ones? Oh, yeah. Another one from their Vertigo imprint. The Sandman himself.
Yup.
Returns for a book set in the Sandman universe called The Dreaming. This is written by Simon Spurrier. Beautiful art by Bilquis Everly and excellent colors by Matt Lopez. Siobhan, this kind of builds on what we saw in the big Dreaming, the Sandman universe number one, which kind of introduced all of these new titles that we're going to get in this universe. What did you think?
It's a tough one, right? Like, it's hard to pick up the mantle of something that is so stamped with Neil Gaiman's voice.
Yep.
Like, how do you really carry that on? And I think Simon Spurrier is a pretty good choice, but this is a bit like, very, very wordy.
Yeah. So the Sandman himself, the King of Dreams, is missing from his dream realm. And so this book, I think somewhat cleverly, focuses on all of the cast from the Sandman that kind of worked in the background of some of those stories. They weren't really that prevalent throughout the stories. They never really got like A or even B plots. They were just kind of always there when the King of Dreams went back to his abode. So you have Lucien, the librarian. You have the
Pumpkinhead guy
who's racist now apparently.
Yep. Matthew the Raven.
And then there's a new kind of angel figure who kind
the
of...
chick, Dora?
Yeah, Dora, yeah. Who gets her food from other people's dreams. And she isn't liked and also does not like anyone else in the realm.
Mm.
And the fact that now the Sandman is not there, she's actually enjoying that he's not there and she can get away with whatever she wants. At one point, she fucks a demon from hell.
We've all been there.
It's good. I'm never going to keep with it. It just, I feel like I finished this issue and I was like, I don't really feel like this did anything more than that first Dreaming Sandman one did.
Yeah, totally.
Last month.
I feel like it drags a little bit and I found myself like halfway through the issue like, still so much to go.
That said, if we started getting the Sandman now, issue by issue, I would have been like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, true.
Because that first trade, I remember like when I first picked it up, I bought the box set of all 10 trades straight away. Yeah. And like I got into it. I was like, what have I got myself into? And obviously it does get incredible very quickly. But these series are by nature quite a slow burn.
Yeah.
There is a lot of world to be built.
Bilquis Everly is fucking very, very good, though.
Definitely.
Really beautiful.
And probably the main reason that I'm keeping the pages turning.
Mm-hmm.
I'll stick with this. It's not quite what I thought it was going to be yet, but then it also kind of is.
Just, I would like there to be, like, a surprise.
Oh, yeah?
Like, you know, what? I don't know. Like, I mean, they've done the story of, like, he's not in the Dreaming anymore. He's disappeared.
Yeah, they even make note of, like, it happening all the time.
So it'd be cool to, like, see them do something new in the Sandman universe.
Yeah. I don't remember the Pumpkinhead guy being racist. He was like kind of like
no.
He was my favorite guy, I think. now I'm like, oh no.
Turns out I'm mad racist. I always discovered on this episode. This. Jesus.
So also through DC this week, we got two titles through Jinx World, which is the new place of publishing for Brian Michael Bendis's creator-owned comics, and we got one brand new series and one returning series. One that he started over at Icon. Let's start with this one. This is the United States versus Murder, Inc. His collaboration with Michael Avon Oeming and colors by Taki Soma. Last week we got another one of his returning series, Scarlet, which mm-hmm. I didn't think was a very good introduction to the series at all.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think this is absolutely a great, like it is kind of like a by the numbers organized crime comic book. I happen to like those quite a lot.
Totally.
And, I quite enjoyed this number one, which is all new characters. So I read the first six issues of the series when it started over at Icon,
mm-hmm.
Before the podcast started. And it was okay. I dropped it because it didn't really go anywhere. But this feels like an entirely new family.
Yep.
If there were someone that was introduced in the previous one, I don't remember, but this feels very different. It's really cold and grisly. In this, we see someone high up in a crime family is thrown off a building, and his daughter is in school and telling for show and tell that her father got thrown off a building
mm-hmm,
and died.
Mm-hmm.
And then she gets to exact her revenge as like a 6-year-old on her father's killer. And of course, the story jumping off at that point, you know, it's going to be pretty grim throughout. And what's cool is that it's balanced by Michael Avon Oeming's very cartoony art. Like there's some hideous stuff that he draws, but because it's done in his kind of quite pop arty style, it's never like ugh.
And the colors are so great. Like everyone's tinged purple and blue, and it's very sort of muted colors. But it's a very like interesting color palette. I love it.
Yeah.
I thought this was really cool, and I like the angle of it. Like, you know, she's a woman, and they've never had female enforcers before, so she has to be the best enforcer. She has to fucking prove that she is 10 times better than everyone else to be able to be considered just as good.
Yeah.
So it's like, I think he does a good job.
Yeah, so maybe, I don't know, maybe this is like some kind of anthology-esque series where every edition features on a different family in organized crime or something, or maybe this will have ties to the characters we met in the first book.
Mm.
But for those wondering if this is a good jumping on point, I say yes.
Absolutely.
I was also surprisingly on board with Cover this week.
I'm like a weird Bendis fan now.
We generally say that a lot.
I know.
Brian Bendis wrote this one with his Daredevil collaborator, David Mack, right back from, I guess maybe one of the first things most people remember Bendis by is his great Daredevil run, which featured covers throughout the entirety of it by David Mack and some issues as well, particularly the issues that introduced the deaf character Echo.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that?
I mean, I didn't read it, but yeah, I'm aware of it.
Mac is a very of his time artist. A lot of collage is used in his work, and very kind of 90s, like almost like grunge album cover aesthetics in his artwork. And so I was like, okay, strap yourselves in. This is going to feel like, you know, a dated thing, but I do like what Mac does. I think he did like a King's convention thing a couple of years ago, and I bought a poster
of it. For sure. We've had him out before.
But then I turned the page, and this is like really, really awesome, like understated, simple, almost like indie-ish art, as opposed to kind of like alternative 90s stuff.
And the style changes up consistently. Like some of the panels, all of a sudden, this female character is like rendered in like gorgeous watercolors, and she looks very real and vibrant. And then in the next panel, she's back to black and white. Like it's really super interesting and really clever.
So
beautiful.
Cover is about a comic book artist traveling to cons, trying to make ends meet, as all comic book artists do. You know, trying to like meet all these deadlines and work his way through that while also traveling to con. Mm-hmm. And at a con, he meets someone who's a big fan of his work, a woman who buys everything, like spends thousands of dollars, and all the other artists at the con are like, "Oh my god, who's this person?" Blah blah blah. She then gets in touch with him at another con and asks him out to dinner, and reveals that she is a spy, and then ghosts on a like a Michelin starred meal, which he has to pay, which is fine though. He's got plenty of money because she gave him money for his prints. And the finale of this issue, he's flown to somewhere,
Istanbul,
where he's never been before, and who should meet him to pick him up at the airport but this apparent spy.
It was good fun.
It was really good. It was a really simple story. The Bendis-y narration, like, here's the thing. Bendis does his Bendis-y narration stuff better when he's doing it for a dude.
Yes. Like, yes, I agree.
I'm not saying he shouldn't write women, but he shouldn't.
He shouldn't write the internal narrative of women sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think it's pretty much what I was getting at.
Yeah.
But the internal narrative of this, like, you know, and if you I follow Bendis on Tumblr and Twitter. He shares more art than he does anything else. Like, he's clearly a massive fan. He's in the comics because he gets to work with his artists. He has his roster of artists, and they're the ones who are all working on these Jinx World things. So he clearly has a lot of respect for that world. And that's really evident through this character who's like flawed, but also like really innocent in a way. This was a really great, like, if Bordertown didn't come out this week, this would be my favorite number one of the week, I think.
Yeah, this was really, really good. And David Mack is like exceptionally good.
Definitely my favorite work that I've seen him do.
Yeah.
This was awesome. I highly recommend anyone like kind of that's been skeptical of, you know, Bendis' creator and stuff coming back to DC as well. Give this one a shot. This is easily the best of them so far.
Absolutely agreed.
Really, really good.
I'm really interested to see where it goes. It's like a cool mystery. Cool mystery they've set up.
Definitely.
Love it.
Cool, so those are all the DC books this week, and Marvel put out a couple as well, including Thanos Legacy, number one. This is a new series by Donny Cates, which also featured a guest story by Jerry Duggan. Cates' story is drawn by Brian Level, and Duggan's story, which is entirely silent, and about Gamora, a pretty simple story about Gamora being sent to kill people. This has art by Corey Smith and Ruth Redmond. The backup story is fine. Like,
yeah,
it's a good. I love silent comic book stories, mostly because they take 10 seconds to read.
Hell yeah. but that was a cute one. Not a cute one, but it was a good one.
It was good. And then, the Thanos Legacy kind of spins out of both Cates's Thanos run, in which Thanos travels to the future to help his future self win. And also spins out of the fact that Thanos has recently died at the hands of Gamora in Infinity War.
And also spins out of Cosmic Ghost Rider, Donny Cates' other big property.
And so it introduces some like fun new mystery. Basically, this is like what happens to Thanos' body once he's being killed by Gamora. And we have Cosmic Ghost Rider show up as well as Thanos' brother, Star Fox, is that his name? Something like that. Whatever his name is.
Yeah.
Does it matter?
I mean,
he has some weird thing in his body, which is apparently his will.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's fun. It's more Donny Cates just doing whatever the fuck he wants. And I'm
absolutely
into it.
Yep. I like it. I like his vision for the sort of cosmic universe.
Keep letting him do whatever he wants, Marvel, because he hasn't steered us wrong yet.
Absolutely. He's doing the Guardians book, right?
That's right. Next, is it next year? Maybe it's end of this year.
Well, I'm keen.
Yeah, I'm keen too. He's got some amazing books just this week for us to talk about. So more of him later. But also spinning out of Infinity Wars this week was As Guardians of the Galaxy, a book that when I saw the cover, I was like, hell motherfucking yeah, because it's Angela what's her name?
Valkyrie
and Throg, the Thor, and Scourge, and some other guys.
Thunderstrike.
And I was like, oh, this sounds really great. But then it's written by Cullen Bunn, who...
Oh, that explains a lot. I didn't even notice.
Yeah, written by Cullen Bunn with art by Matteo Lolli and Federico Blee. Cullen Bunn, for those who don't know, writes more comics than anybody else. As in, like, new series. Last year, we lost count of how many number ones he put out at, like, 30. Mm-hmm. One of our wonderful listeners, Connor, they worked out this week that Cullen Bunn has had a lazy year. He's only written 11 number ones this year.
Whoa.
But this is one of them. My problem with Cullen Bunn on some titles, not all of them, I do enjoy some of his horror stuff and The Sixth Gun and anything from that universe, is that it'll be like a cool sounding concept and then he'll just kind of do the bare minimum story-wise and character-wise.
Yeah, there's never much like in the way of plot or character development. And there's too much dialogue.
Yeah, but it's not dialogue that leads to the plot. It's like them describing what they're doing at the time as they do it.
I realized that I didn't finish this because I was like, oh, when did Nebula show up? But that's a, like, this was a hard slog to get through, which it really shouldn't be.
No. Basically a bunch of Asgardians assemble because there's some, cosmic bullshit they have to deal with. And there's some cool surprises. The best moments in this book come from the Thor Throg.
Love Throg.
The Thor Throg. The Frog Thor is what I meant to say. Who like just kind of creates havoc in this issue as a little frog with a hammer. Lots of fun. There's a there's two big surprise reveals. One of them is that Nebula is going to kind of be the antagonist of this series, or an antagonist, and also that someone kind of steering the Asgardians kind of into the direction that he wants them to is none other than the return of Kid Loki.
Yeah, I know.
Journey into Mystery Realm.
That's weird.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how it works, but that was enough for me to go, okay, maybe I need to give this another issue. Because I think even though the first half of this issue wasn't what I wanted from it, it did eventually get there. And hopefully the next issue will as well. Do you remember what was good? Was Cullen Bunn's Magneto run.
That was fucking really good.
That was so good. And that had art by...
Gabriel Walter. That's why it was so good.
That was good as fuck.
But also didn't close out strong.
Because of that stupid event where all the good guys became bad guys and the bad guys became good guys.
Good God, what was that?
Rick Remender wrote it and then he quit Marvel.
Nice.
Axis.
Just burn everything to the ground and leave.
Finally from Marvel this week was the Silver Surfer Annual number one, written by a team that I have no familiarity with whatsoever. But upon opening the issue, I was like, oh, this looks a lot like a Mobius book. And they intended it to. Specifically, I think it wasn't either an annual or a one-shot by Mobius many years ago. Have you read that, Silver Surfer?
No, I haven't, which is bad and dumb.
So speaking of King's Comics at Pitt Street, the first time I visited when... your lovely boyfriend,
the lovely Nate,
canonically lovely Nate, was working. He was like, "Oh, yo, this just got a re-release, and it was like the Mobius Silver Surfer issue for like $7." And I bought that like 8-9 years ago, and really cool, really cool. Thanks, Nate.
I can't believe Nate recommended that. I can't believe Nate recommended something that wasn't X-Men.
So it's written by Ethan Sachs and Andre Lima Arajo on art and Chris O'Halloran on colors, This is basically a story about Silver Surfer when he was...
the Herald of Galactus.
Exactly, the Herald of Galactus. So he's got to find planets for Galactus to eat so he doesn't eat Silver Surfer's home planet. Mm-hmm. Of course, Silver Surfer finds a planet that he reckons the universe can live without and then finds magic in the people who live there. It's a really cool, tragic...
Absolutely.
Silver Surfer story, because obviously we know what he goes on to become, but it's fun visiting this era because there's a lot of gaps in our history that we don't know about, and this is a beautiful,
gorgeous, great, really beautiful issue. Yeah.
Have you heard of that?
I have, but I can't think of what else is down off the top of my head.
Yeah, this is spectacular, though.
This is one of those instances where Wayne from King's Comics was like, oh, that sucked. And I've realized recently that I was like, ah, if Wayne thinks something sucks, I'm going to love it. How? If Wayne thinks something is great, I'm going to hate it.
Why would anyone hate this?
It was because he's a big, dumb, idiot baby who hates everything that's good. and he's wrong 100% of the time. Like,
it is definitely paying homage to many stories that we've read before, but it's doing enough new with it.
Absolutely.
And it looks incredible enough that it's, yeah, like, it's fine.
And it's like this perfect, perfectly paced, gorgeous, tragic story that deals with life.
Yes, life itself. Ethan Sachs, definitely someone that I'm going to keep an eye out for now.
Absolutely.
I really enjoyed his issue.
Yep, that was
real
great.
Good stuff.
Real worth, like, genuinely an annual worth tracking down.
Yeah, I agree. So we've got a couple more now. One from Image, written by Scotty Young, who gave us I Hate Fairyland and... Mm-hmm. All those covers of all the Marvel heroes looking like babies, yep, over the years.
He did that amazing what's that movie? Over the Rainbow, the thingy. Do you know what I mean?
Like,
with the Tin Man.
Oh, right. Dorothy, the Wizard of Oz.
The Wizard of Oz. He did, yeah, all those Wizard of Oz comics that were great.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they were good. Art on this one is by Aaron Connolly, with colors by Jean-François Bellu.
Perfect.
P.S. as if it's symbiote. It is totally symbiote, isn't it? Yeah. I've been saying symbiote this whole time.
I know.
I mean, who cares, to be honest?
Yeah, it doesn't, like, matter.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe it's
not a big deal.
It's just my accent.
It's just your accent. You're just weird.
The comic that I'm talking about by that creative team is Bully Wars, number one. And it's about a bully who loves bullying. He's nerdy friends, but... No, not friends, like all the nerds at his school, but then they go to a new school and now the bully's about to get bullied himself, and who can he turn to not be bullied but the nerds he used to bully? This was fine, hard pass for all future issues.
Oh, really? Yeah. I thought I enjoyed this. It was like silly. I feel like Scotty Young has that real like 90s cartoon sort of sensibility, like it's vaguely sort of Ren and Stimpy inspired. Everything's very manic, everything's really crazy. But I thought this was like a really great, funny, all ages high school thing.
Yep, it absolutely was.
I'm probably gonna
just don't need to read any more of it.
Yeah, fair enough. But the color's great, and it's like, if that sounds like it appeals to you, I do recommend it.
Watch me still read it.
Yeah, totally.
I'm like, oh, maybe I did like it. I don't know. Dark Horse this week gave us a new number one from Margaret Atwood and Ken Stacey called War Bears.
Margaret Atwood is a furry. 100%. Continue.
Tell me more about her first before I say anything about her comic book. Who is she?
You know, she wrote The Handmaid's Tale. Big, important, famous author.
Right.
But the two comic books that she's written have been about anthropomorphized animals. It's like sexy men.
That's so funny.
She did Angel Cat Bird, which I actually really liked.
Oh, right. She did that.
And
right.
Which is like... she was doing it for some kind of charity or like thing that's about like, don't put your cats outside because they eat birds. But then she made it into this like crazy superhero story. And this is a World War II era set book about cartoonists.
Yeah,
and
so,
people turning into bears.
Well, no. So
lady bears.
Normally when we think about cartoonists working during World War II, we think about New York, but this is set in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
But you could pretty essentially... move it all to New York, yeah, and it'd be exactly the same. And we see a young cartoonist whose family is struggling. He goes to a comic book publisher, and the boss is a lady. And she says that she'll pay him $20 a week.
Mm-hmm.
And he ends up working underneath someone who has to do all of his scrap work. But then while he's alone in the studio one night, he creates his own character, who's the Werebear or something like that. And she's like a sexy... war-fighting bear lady.
Bear lady.
They start publishing his comics. This was like a kind of sweet nod to the era of...
the golden age of superhero
Kirby
comic books.
And Cubit, etc.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to read any more of this. Did you like it?
I liked it. I thought this was like a fun story that like, while we're familiar with it and familiar with the tropes, we don't get to see it that much. I really liked the art. It was vaguely reminiscent of like Jill Thompson, people like that, like classic Dark Horse.
Yep.
Creators. I liked it. I think Margaret Atwood has like funny things to say. And I think I like her stepping into the comic book realm. I think that she's
and
like
the furry
an interesting.
Realm.
And the furry realm. I think she's adding to the furry canon. I don't know what I'm talking about. But I liked it.
Furry canon.
I know.
That'd be a good bar.
Yeah, that's a good fun name. Furry canon.
Finally, from Dynamite,
I have
read...
two more after that, but
oh,
yes.
Wow, I read James Bond Origin, written by Jeff Parker, with art by Bob Kue and Simon Boland. And this is a James Bond story set during World War II. Again, mm-hmm. another World War II book. And
when he was a teen.
He's a teen, which, yeah, so yeah, obviously not the James Bond we see today.
Absolutely.
Different James Bond in another time, everybody.
I don't care about this. Like, I don't care about James Bond before he became James Bond. That's not the point of James Bond.
Yeah, so he's, like, studying and trying to save a professor, and then he has to stop these bad guys from making a bomb or something.
Yeah, remember. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
I don't care.
If you are desperate for more James Bond comics...
there's better ones.
There are better ones, that's true.
Just reread those Warren Ellis ones from a couple years ago. That was really good. I'm rewatching all of the James Bond movies from the beginning at the moment.
Have you got a favorite?
Like Bond or movie?
Bond and then movie.
Sean Connery is very handsome, but those movies are pretty bad.
Yeah, they're really slow.
They're really slow, and there's not much plot, and he hits women a lot. It's a lot of smacking around ladies. But I'll keep you posted, because I'm excited.
So you're actually just going through... I couldn't do... I need to jump throughout the timeline.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to like get through the sort of... Roger Moore era.
I'm a huge fan of Timothy Dalton's Bond movies.
I'm so fucking excited that Timothy Dalton is in Doom Patrol.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Holy shit. I like stood up and screamed at Jim for like 5 minutes when we found out. I'm so excited about that TV show.
He was in a movie that was like Fran Drescher, like post the only thing she did after The Nanny.
What?
And it's like her becoming a nanny and he's like a dictator.
Cool.
Yeah.
I remember
watching it on a
plane
like 20 years ago.
Wow. I need to find that movie. Okay, I read two more number ones, but I don't know. Oh, this one's a number one. This one's a one-shot. I read Aphrodite 9, Ares, written by Leon Glazer, art by... Oh, this is like... This had two stories in it, and it's like a talent hunt, 2017. What in the fuck? That doesn't make any sense. It's 2018. Anyway... I don't really understand what this is now, but it's two short stories in the Aphrodite universe,
right. That
world, and I quite liked it. I'm finding myself more and more invested in this universe of sexy robo ladies, and it's a delight to be here.
Okay.
That's it.
You love this universe.
I do. I love sexy robo ladies.
Hey, guess what the Fran Drescher and Timothy Dalton movie in which she... is a beauty school teacher who becomes a local hero by rescuing lab animals from a fire in her workplace building. She's offered a job
as an emissary
from the Eastern European nation of Slovetsia.
Oh, no.
Boris Pachenko, played by Timothy Dalton,
the country's
dictator, wants to improve his image by hiring an American tutor for his children. Mistaken for a real teacher, Joy arrives in Slovetsia and soon bumps heads with Boris while brightening up his palace life.
Fuck yes.
It's called The Beautician and the Beast.
Yes! I just walked into this
conversation. I knew the title of that movie.
Oh, that's good.
That's so good. I'm looking that up. Is that on Netflix? I better be.
It's on United Airlines flights to America circa 1996.
Well, that's a time I wish I could go back to. I was going to talk about this as well, but I don't even know what to say about it because it's very long and complicated. I read The Vigilant, issue 1 from 2000 AD. This is a 2000 AD superhero team creation led by someone wearing like Kanye West circa... Gold Digger style sunglasses.
Okay.
And it's like a very involved superhero team. I wouldn't say this was a good jumping on point. And I wouldn't say anyone should read it. The end.
Great. I'm going to pass those last two books to me.
Yes.
As we pretend that we have a dice.
Oh, yeah.
You've packed the dice.
I packed up my dice.
It's at the new store again.
Yeah.
Already. 304 George Street.
403 George Street.
Fuck.
Opposite Dimmicks. Okay. 403 George Street. Opposite Dimmicks.
Of course, you can find every book that we talk about at kingscomics.com. And if you want to talk about those books, the best place to do it is facebook.com/groups/seriousissuespodcast, where we have a group of 2,000-ish members all talking about comics and comics-related stuff.
All night.
All goddamn day and night. DC is closest to me right now, so let's talk about DC.
Yeah.
As in, like, physically, not...
Yes, not closest to your heart.
Yeah, yeah.
Emotionally.
Hey, let's check in with Tom King's Batman run. Now 54 issues deep. This one issue was had art by Matt Wagner.
I know. I love Matt Wagner.
It was cool seeing him showing up. A very, very different artist to what we've seen on this book in the last few issues.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It feels like a product of its time, I guess, compared to how modern a lot of... I guess not really Lee Weeks, but I don't know. It was strange. I was like, oh, shit, Matt Wagner. Okay, cool. But I imagine some people may have been thrown by his style on this book.
Definitely. I think if you're not, like, aware of his work in the past, you'd be a bit confused by this choice.
Tomo Moore on colors. And we see a story. Here's the thing, Siobhan.
Yeah.
Did you know that raising a child is a lot like trying to eat and enjoy a cucumber sandwich? Because that is, I don't know if you got it, by Tom King's very, very clever metaphor that in this issue, he compares raising Dick Grayson and fitting into a family. It's a lot like
learning to love
cucumber sandwiches. Dick Grayson is a cucumber sandwich.
I don't even know how to talk about this. No, thank you. Not for me. Why do I keep reading this?
The most part of the...
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This issue was good. It's just then when he just like just really kicks you and just yells, metaphor.
Yeah. Like, I'm surprised he didn't have just someone on the radio saying, raising children is tough.
Yeah.
That's so what he cucumbers. Usually does. I also just like, I wish he'd like tell a story instead of just linking together a bunch of random conversations between Bruce and Nightwing.
Yeah.
Bruce and Dick. And I don't think he writes a good Bruce.
Well, the main thing...
I don't like his Bruce.
I want to go back to that point you made, which is that, yeah, he's not really writing a story. This entire run has been a series of conversations since, I guess, the Bane thing wrapped up. But, like, you know, some of them have been great. Like the one where they go to Talia to, you know, before they were going to get married. That was an excellent arc. The last good arc, I reckon, of this.
Yeah.
Like, really good arc. But then I feel like there's no real kind of ongoing plot. It is just these like weird vignettes of mostly conversations where he's like, well, Batman is a jar of pickles. And here's why.
And also there's this real like just making, and maybe I'm being like overly harsh, but I feel like he just is like, remember all these stupid fucking villains that Batman had? Isn't that hilarious? Now real life, okay?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Anyway. We're still going to read it all the way through to issue 100, baby.
Oh, man.
part of me enjoys it, but like a lot of everything else he's done before, I guess, Batman and Mr. Miracle has been predominantly plot-driven. Like, The Vision was a very plot-driven 12 issues.
Yeah, true.
Sheriff of Babylon. Sheriff of Babylon is like...
I would argue, though, that they're mostly character pieces, largely.
Right.
But those were... more tightly plotted. Maybe that's the thing. Sure. Maybe he can only have 12 issues. You can only give him 12 issues.
I mean, that's Mr. Miracle is 12 issues long.
Well, it turns out you can't even give him that. Give him one issue. One issue at a time.
What about all those short stories we read that were like 80 issues that made you want to rip them out and tear them to pieces?
Yeah. Look, I don't think I like Tom King. I just don't like his general vibe and his attitude towards all of my precious boys who I love so much.
What about Christopher Priest? What do you think about him?
Love Christopher Priest!
He wrote issue 35 of Deathstroke this week, which featured his regular artist, collaborator, whose last name is fun to say, Pugulian.
Sure is.
Carlo Pugulian? Yes, Pugulian.
I like the way he draws Batman's little ears.
Yeah, me too. Jason Paz and Andy Owens on inks, Jeremy Cox on colors. This is the finale of the Deathstroke versus Batman arc, which has been pretty fun. Essentially, the old men in Deathstroke and Batman's lives, aka Wintergreen and Alfred,
mm-hmm.
Team up to teach their dumb boys a lesson.
Yep.
And it was fun.
Yes, absolutely. And this had way better moments of like talking about fatherhood and being a parent and stuff like that in like subtle, cool ways that were much better than whatever the fuck Tom King is doing.
Yeah,
but I love his character development for Deathstroke. I love his Bruce. I wish Christopher Priest had more of a chance to play around in the DC Universe because I think he's so good.
Yeah, Mike, I know he turned down the chance to be the Batman editor, which is offered to him recently.
Ooh.
It's so good.
That would have been so good. Yeah. I wish he'd had longer on Justice League as well. But I really like the art on this. I don't know how much longer he's on Deathstroke, but this whole arc's been really fun.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not sure about the final reveal when Batman throws the paternity test results in the fire and it reveals that as it slowly burns that Damian Wayne's parent is a cucumber sandwich. That was a bit on the nose.
I was shocked.
But finally, from DC. You've already got another one.
Yeah.
Talk about Super Sons.
I'm probably not going to keep reading this. It's like Little Justice League from an alternate world come here to like...
But it's like Little Crime Syndicate, isn't it?
Yeah. So they're like from an alien world that grew up on Earth TV. And so they know who all the superheroes are. So this bad team of little guys are like, oh, we're going to come be evil. But then the Joker isn't evil and he's trying to get Robin to help him. This is fine. It's just not really like my vibe.
Yeah, totally. And funny, I feel like we were complaining about wanting something to be a bit more like this. No, you know what it is? It's still doing otherworldly, other-dimensional
stuff. Like
they're
stuff in space.
That, so they don't need to do that.
No,
just
exactly.
Have it being like, oh, Damien, I can't go solve crime until I walk the fucking dog. Crypto needs...
Yeah. Help me with my homework.
Oh, no, I forgot to bring a plastic bag to pick up Crypto's poos.
What are we going to do?
Oh, I know. We'll use your cape. Ta-da! The end.
That's what I want.
Someone draw that. Injustice 2. We are rapidly approaching the end of this phenomenal run by Tom Taylor and various artists. And this issue made me fucking cry.
This was an emotional issue. Like,
so I was hosting a food event on Saturday and I brought my comics because I knew it would be like... I was like hosting a stage with bands on it. Other bands were playing for an hour. I would introduce them. Then they would get off and then I would introduce the next one. So I'd sit down while the bands are playing, read some comics.
What kind of food band event was this?
It was called Parkland's Food Fest. Foods and bands together? I've heard of bands and foods, but foods and bands?
Foods and bands. No, thank you. That was too much for me.
It was just 12 stalls of cucumber sandwiches and various mothers telling them that it's like parenting. I was like, oh, I've got 5 minutes until I've got to go on stage and introduce the first act. I'll just sit down and read a comic. What's a fun one that I can just read quickly and enjoy? I know, Injustice 2. And I started fucking weeping and I had bloodshot eyes and had to get up in front of everyone and introduce like an African drum group.
He just looked really like cool and stoned.
Sure.
Cool weapons.
So Injustice 2 has been just like, you know, the continuation of something that Tom Taylor started many years ago, the tie into a video game, that the series became way better than it had any right to be.
Yep.
This issue featured art by someone called Zermanico and colors by Jay Nanjan. And it's entirely set in space. There was a big war between the Green Lanterns, the Red Lanterns, Starro, none other than Brainiac shows up. The person who is kind of told that he's the only only person that can stop this war from happening is the very young Jaime Reyes, aka Blue Beetle, and he has no idea how he's going to do that. And it turns out that it's Booster Gold who has to basically sacrifice himself to the way he does it and the way it's done is so moving and so like masterfully done.
Yep.
And I didn't see it coming. And then when it did, it ends. It's not, it just is, it was just perfect. And I just started fucking bawling. Yep. Yeah.
It was heartbreaking and it was earned and it was like respectful to the stuff that's come before. There are little moments in there for fans, but I'm assuming that if you haven't, read all of Justice League International, that you would also get a lot out of this. Really sweet, really beautifully done.
Look, there's a lot of people that compare this to 52, and I reckon it's as good as 52, which is like,
I disagree. But yes,
you haven't read much of it. I think if you read all of it, you would agree.
Okay,
you've read like 4 issues of it.
Yeah, I know, but 52 is so good.
Yeah, this is like 52 never made me cry, and that's how I measure. I at the end
goodness.
Of every comic book run, I have a little jar that I hold underneath my eyes, and I measure the millimeters of tears, and that's how much.
That's the official ranking. Yep. Now you hear. But I like Lobo as a space fish priest more than I like Lobo as a Green Lantern.
He was, you know what I mean? Yeah, sure, I get it. Yeah. anyway, very very good issue.
Excellent.
And, I know that the print run of Injustice 2 is a little bit behind the digital run, so we will be getting the last issue of that soon, but apparently it's already been coming out and people love it.
Great.
Image books this week. We should give a little clarification that Paper Girls are not shipped to Kings this week, which is a real bummer.
Hopefully we'll
catch up with that soon. But a few books did that Siobhan didn't read, but I did, so I'll just burn through them very quickly.
Yes, please.
The Walking Dead. It's getting really slow and
still walking.
Yeah, still walking.
Still dead.
Not so much dead. It's all about the alive people, and there's the zombies are not really a problem for our survivors anymore. It's other people.
It's the people. That's the real monster, right?
Yeah.
Man.
This kind of a riot breaks out in the very civilized area they're in now, which is like it was supposed to. It's just it wasn't normally this series has the most amazing cliffhangers, and they haven't had an incredible one in a while. Give me a good cliffhanger, please. The Last Siege by Landry Q. Walker, Justin Greenwood, Eric Jones, and Patrick Brosseau. This is the medieval comic about a visitor from the east who is the heir to the throne, and there's an attacking more visitors from the east who are about to attack this castle, and it's really really good. And we kind of saw the princess, who is going to be forced to be marrying this dumb jerk, stand up for herself and kill that jerk.
Hell yeah.
In this issue. I'm really curious as to where this is going to go next. It's a really good, pretty like it should be grim, but it isn't.
Hmm.
It reminds me a lot of, that Brian Wood Crusades book, but it's not super grim the whole way. It allows moments of lightness in the story, which is good.
Oh, cool.
Black Science 38. The final issue of the second last arc of this series by Rick Remender, Matteo Scalera, and Moreno Denisio. Really, really good and like just an enormous mindfuck. Again, this is a book that I almost dropped when it started getting, like a lot of Remender's work often does, get just relentlessly bleak with no kind of moments of hope for any of our characters. And this ends on such a beautiful, like, yes, win for all the characters they didn't think was possible.
Oh,
and,
nice.
Yeah, I can't wait to see where they go with the final arc.
He'll probably fucking destroy everything in the final arc just to make you cry.
No, I think it's going to be like an uncharacteristically happy Rick Remender ending. Where everything goes back to normal or something.
Mm.
It was all a dream.
Oh, man.
Stray Bullets.
I would respect him if he did that.
Stray Bullets, Sunshine and Roses 38. Probably my second favorite book that I read this week.
Mm-hmm.
This is written and drawn by David Laffam. It is one of my favorite series of all time. And we are nearing the end of this chapter of it, which means we'll take a long break from it for a while, I think. Every like 6 to 10 issues, they do a kind of like fantasy sci-fi spin-off book. Called Amy Racecar, in which one of the characters envisages herself as like this like super criminal who like travels through space and kills people.
Cool.
Then we have this iteration of it is someone called Lil B, who is the daughter of Amy Racecar. And the basically the Amy Racecar issues will kind of sum up what happened in the last six or so issues, but okay. in a really weird and fantastical way. Mm-hmm. And this one does, but then constantly breaks back and forth between what's actually happening in the world and what is being imagined.
Okay.
And ends on just like an incredible moment. Like that was like the, oh shit, cliffhanger that I needed when Walking Dead didn't deliver one.
Yeah,
and,
nice.
I think there's only two or three issues left of Sunshine and Roses. And, I can't wait to see what happens. Probably enormous amount of death because I thought that this book delivers in spades, but fuck man, what a series. The cool. best. We've got Snot Girl to talk about eventually, but first you read a book that I didn't.
I read issue 3 of Unnatural by Mirka Andolfo. Mirka? I'm going to say Mirka
sexy
Andolfo.
Pig.
Sexy pig. Sexy furry book about a world in which anthropomorphized animal people cannot marry outside of their species. If they do, that is unnatural. You cannot do that. And there is like a breeding program, whereas if you haven't found a partner by the age of 25, they set you up with someone in your species.
Sexy furry piggies breeding camp. Sexy furry breed.
That's good. It's beautiful. So our hero is a sexy pig lady who has crazy dreams about a sexy wolf man. And that might be, they might be part of something bigger and weirder than they could possibly imagine. And so we see our girl being set up on her date with a pig guy, but he is not what he seems. And this keeps getting more and more bizarre, but I really like it. It's really like silly and the, you know, the sort of allegorical nature of it is like hammered over your head a little bit, but the art's really fun and she's like expanding the universe in a way that's really interesting, and it's something really, you know, it's not, there's not any other sexy pig stories about nope. a sexy pig trying to have sex with a sexy wolf man.
And that's what readers want.
That's what you want. Look at the cover of the next issue. Woo, sexy pig butt.
Sexy
wolf butt, sorry.
Jeez.
And there's like mad pinups inside. It's a Rudy Doody book, but I like it.
Is the Dong Watch ever feature?
No, you know no what? I don't yet. Think it's that that progressive, to Damn. Be honest. But I like it. I like the hilarious story elements that are tying the sexy bits together.
We got a blurred dong in issue 11 of Snot Girl.
Fuck yes.
Side note, how the fuck is it only 11 issues of Snot Girl so far? Because they've told so many more stories yeah. in this series so far.
It's one of those funny stories where it feels like every issue you're like, oh, that not that much happened. But then you think back, you're like, oh, actually fucking tons
yeah,
happened.
Yeah, so much happened. So Snot Girl is a book about a fashion blogger written by Brian Lee O'Malley with art by Leslie Hung. Where this... Our hero was pretty despicable at the start of the series. Mm-hmm. You know, as you get to know her more and more, you feel for her a lot and you want her to win, I guess. Like, you know, you want her to be better than her crappy haters club brunch group.
Yep.
When she starts to fall for and hook up with cool girl. I'm more for this relationship, but...
Cool girl seems like bad news, though.
I know, but like everyone's attracted to bad news, Siobhan. Everyone.
Whoa.
I thought this was a spectacular issue.
Absolutely. I like the moments of Lottie realizing that if she is herself, people will accept that.
Yes.
That's nice.
Yeah. Just
little subtle character moments. And I love the new friendship between Sunny and
Ashley.
And they're like weird bro dates and
yeah.
little weird thing going on. And I love the ongoing uneasiness around some of these characters. I love it. Fuck, it's so good.
It's so good. It's lapsed Scott Pilgrim for me in terms of this is like the
this might be my favorite thing he's ever done.
Yeah, me too. I just his voice for these characters is so natural and
yeah.
it's crazy. Like
yeah.
it's hard to believe that the same guy wrote Scott Pilgrim is writing these women in this book.
Totally. He has some kind of crazy insight into the way that the mind of the young fashion blogger Instagram influencer works. I don't know where he gets it from, but it's really pitch perfect all
yep,
the time, and
absolutely.
I like Lottie so much more now, which is funny.
Yeah,
there's but just it's so great, gorgeous. It's so fuck, gorgeous, Leslie Hung yeah. is so good. She is so good. These characters look beautiful.
The concept art at the back as well.
Yep,
just so great. And then also I even love the pictures of people that have been cosplaying as characters from Snot Girl
yep.
recently. I love it. So great. What a great book.
It's such a good book.
That's such a treat to get it.
I'm so excited it's back.
So that's Image and DC done. We've got Marvel to burn through now. And I'll start with Avengers quickly, which you didn't read.
I did.
Oh, you did. Right,
I
cool.
did read it.
Avengers 7, written by Jason Aaron, with art by Sarah Pacelli and Justin Ponsor, told a story, the origin story of, the, I guess, the first Ghost Rider,
yep.
who was one of the first cavemen with the gift of speech, mm-hmm. who can think for themselves, he is given the Ghost Rider powers by Mephisto, and he rides a flaming woolly mammoth. And this basically like tells us his life up to when he first meets Odin and mm-hmm. The Phoenix, which we saw in the DC, Avengers 1 million BC or whatever it was called.
Mm-hmm.
This was like a pretty good issue. It was also the best issue of this Avengers series so far.
Yeah.
Which says more about the series than it does about the issue. But yeah, totally. I still enjoyed this.
I really enjoyed this issue. Up until like 3/4 of the way through, I forgot what comic book I was reading. I was just really enjoying the story. And then I was like, oh, he's a Ghost Rider. Oh, okay. I remember what this is. But I enjoyed this issue a lot.
Yeah.
But it is telling that this has been the best issue so far.
Yeah, totally.
This Avengers run.
Maybe he just had to write like a kind of like...
You just have to do the stupid getting the team together arc and then
I normally love the getting the team together arc. Didn't you?
Yeah, I don't think... Yeah. Anyway.
It's not fair.
Do it better. Do what I like.
Captain America, issue number 3 by Ta-Nehisi Coates, Lionel Francis Yu and Jerry Alanguilan and Sonny Go. This continues Coates' run of Cap, where Cap is working alongside... Wakanda to help get rid of the people that came in after Hydra from America and made things better. Am I getting that right?
Oh, yeah. They're called like the Power now or
yeah,
something.
Yeah. So basically,
they're pretty much just Hydra.
And there are parts of America that loved when Hydra came in power, not because they're racist, but because that they, you know, they allowed the towns to prosper, these small mm-hmm. towns in the middle of America. And, you know, Cap is... trying to listen to these guys too and not ignore them because that's what led them to side with Hydra to begin with.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I thought it's an interesting series. Like, you know, it's definitely like a slow burn to where we're eventually going to get, but it's not done in a way that Coates' original Black Panther run was, where I was like, where is he going with this? I'm enjoying this burn.
Yeah, totally. I think it's... you know he's going to get you somewhere of value and it's going to be interesting and good fun along the way. And who's on art? McNiven?
Lionel Francis Yu.
Great.
Yeah.
Really doing a great job.
And Sharon, Agent 33 or whatever, has been kidnapped by this woman who basically saps the life from people to keep herself looking young and hot. And I love...
it's the dream.
There's a great panel where she takes the life from someone, like she's like an old lady in a cloak, and the first thing we see of her newly euthanized body is her boobs.
Tits. That's
perky,
how you know.
Perky boobs.
Thank goodness. I'd hate it if she had saggy boobs. That would be the worst.
So we're going to end on 2 of Donny Cates' books this week. Before we get there, we'll get issue number 5 of The Immortal Hulk by Al Ewing, Joe Bennett, Roy Jose and Paul Mounts.
In terms of books that I'm just straight up enjoying, this is probably my favorite Marvel book. I love this.
It's so good. I do miss when it was like the freak of the week.
Yeah.
One issue to one issue in those first 3 issues. But this was a really cool and massive bummer of a story.
Yep.
In which we see the Wendigo. No, what was his name? He's not called Wendigo.
Yeah, we kept saying that and then we got
corrected. And you'd think I would have read the correction and listened.
His name's Walter.
Walter, aka Sasquatch.
Sasquatch. Sasquatch, there we go.
So he was a member of Alpha Flight.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the longer he stays Sasquatch, which everyone wants him to be because Sasquatch is powerful, the further he is from himself. And
the more someone from an evil dimension can make his way into his brain.
And so the suggestion here, and certainly that's what Hulk sees, is that the evil person from this evil dimension that took over Walter's body as Sasquatch was the Hulk.
Hulk's dad.
Hulk's dad. Which is like a really cool and weird reveal. I hope it isn't. I hope it turns out to be something else. I'm sure it will.
I hope it's his dad.
You want it to be his dad? All right.
Yeah, why is it bad to be his dad?
I don't know.
It's good to be his dad.
Daddy issues are boring.
Nah, no way. And I liked the reveal that the sort of hero of the story, who's a female journalist, the reveal that the reason that she's so obsessed with the Hulk is because she wants to be like him.
Yeah, because she when she was young, she watched the Hulk tear her town apart.
Yeah. And she made eye contact with him and she was like, oh shit, I need to be that.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a fucking, that's cool. Yeah. That's a cool, weird reveal.
How do I get to be what you are?
And Joe Bennett's art is exceptional. So good.
I've never enjoyed him as much as I've enjoyed him on this book.
Like, absolutely. It's really a perfect match. Ominous, great.
It feels like classic horror television as well, yes. Like your TV movies. Yeah, it's nailing the vibe. I love it.
Yeah, I really, really love it.
Finally, we've got two Kate's books. And it's only Kate's...
Very tonally different books.
Very, yeah, definitely. So let's talk about Cosmic Ghost Rider first, issue number 3, written by Donny Cates. This one has art by Dylan Burnett and Antonio Fabella on colors. And this, is, of course, is Frank Castle as the Cosmic Ghost Rider many years into the future. And he has just took it upon himself to kidnap Thanos, and he's going to raise him himself...
Baby
to
Thanos.
...to not be evil. Yeah, kidnap baby Thanos straight out of the crib. A future version of Guardians of the Galaxy led by Cable, are here to let Frank Castle know, using legions and legions of, quickly disposed of Marvel heroes from the time stream. He's basically want to let Frank know that the version of Thanos that he raises is so much worse than the other one.
Because what could possibly be wrong with a Thanos that's raised by the Punisher?
And the fucking brilliant reveal of Thanos showing up at the end, full grown man in the Punisher outfit at the end. It's so dumb.
Saying, hey, dad. Yes, fucking perfect. Thank you. I love it.
It was so great.
It's so silly. And I like how much fun he's just having with this. And all of the character designs of these, like, you know, future Marvel heroes and all the different, like, there's a female Iron Fist and there's a weird shirtless Spider-Man and there's Blade and a female Spider-Man, and he decapitates a beardy Cyclops, and
Moon Knight, and yeah, it's
just pure silliness,
and it, you know, it's really grisly and fun, like, you know, just over the top violence the whole way through. It's killer.
Yeah.
Just this is like a perfect example of them just being like, here is our sandbox,
have fun,
fuck it up.
Yeah, like, yeah. Totally. This is like the book that everyone at King's is enjoying at the moment, because great. It's just even straight Wayne. Up even Wayne, because it's got How the Ducks as Juggernaut.
Juggerduck.
But like it is just straight up dumb superhero fun.
It's great that superheroes should be dumb fun often.
Absolutely.
Final book from Marvel this week we're going to talk about is also written by Donny Cates. It's Death of the Inhumans, issue number 3, featuring art by Ariel Olivetti and color by Jordi Belair. When this series started, I was like, this is well written. I don't know why it needs to exist just a kind of like random, you know, black-faced, black-hooded bad guy.
Black-face?
But fuck.
Come on, man.
No, come on. His head is black, like as in black like the night.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think all bad guys have black faces? Is that what this is?
A random new bad guy starts quickly disposing of lots of beloved Inhuman characters. It felt very reactionary to the TV show not going well.
Mm-hmm.
It was still well done. And this issue, I was just like, yep, I fucking love this series. I love what Cates is doing with this series.
Don't like the way Olivetti draws Medusa's hair, which I always feel like is a big part of any Inhumans book, but yep. Everything else is good.
Yeah, yeah, sure. This featured like so many cool little moments of he's really, really good at divvying up different characters for him to use in his book,
Donny Cates.
In his different books, Donny Cates. Like,
absolutely.
It's not just this, you know how like, you know, some characters have their favorites.
Like how Spider-Woman shows up in everything that Bendis writes.
Or how, you know, like Jason Aaron will always use Quentin Quire.
Yep.
Which I love. But like, I love that, Cates is like, he just has like this, I guess, this wish list of various characters that he wants to show up in his books at some point and then do these epic moments with. And I've been like yearning for something great featuring Better A Bill. And I did not know that what I was yearning for was a drunk,
Shirtless, hatless, pantsless,
bulgy, Beta Ray Bolt, fat as well, like overweight, showing up and basically coming to
avenge Lockjaw.
Yeah.
His good buddy Lockjaw. You know what I really like about Donny Cates, and it's sort of a thing that like is a bit hard to put into words, but he's kind of like the anti-Cullen Bunn in that Cullen Bunn comes up with all these ideas, but then has no follow through.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Donny Cates is willing to just do some shit, and Marvel are just letting him do some shit.
And also, like big moments, big things. He seeds the idea and builds to it, whereas Cullen Bunn's like, here's my idea on page one, and in the end, it's like, and it's still my idea on page 24.
Yeah.
Whereas this was just like, when they're like, oh, this guy used to have, like, he's going to be pretty pissed when he finds out about Lockjaw. And I was like, who could this be? Is it Ms. Marvel? Is it like, I was trying to think of like, and then
I was like, who had adventures with Lockjaw?
And then we also get like a really sad moment for Ronan the Accuser, who someone has had like, you know, lots of history with all the cosmic characters of Marvel. This is just a great issue. So great. Olivelli doing great art and great bulges.
Absolutely.
That's a good bulge.
I mean, he doesn't have a penis.
Well, I mean, like, something's bulging. What is that?
That's not. What? That's barely bulgy. That's like flat.
Is it? Oh, I mean, okay, well, yeah, that's, you're right, it's his leg. What if that's his dick?
You were like, whoa, that's huge.
Yeah, imagine if that's his dick. Best like, dong
that
watch
changes
ever.
Everything.
I'm putting this out there. That's not his thigh. Those aren't quads.
Why would his dick be all the way over there?
It's Better Ray Bill dick.
Anyway. Someone could get on the phone to Marvel for me and find out what Beta Ray Bill's anatomy is.
What a
actually
reward
like.
For listening to the end of this
treat,
podcast.
What a treat for you.
We've got a couple more books to talk about from other publishers.
I got two.
What do you got that isn't Van Veronica?
I got Come Into Me, the comic that I always feel uncomfortable saying out loud. Written by Zach Thompson and Lonnie Nadler with pencils and inks by Peter Kowalski. But I always like to say it.
Piotr.
Yeah, exactly. Like in the X-Men TV series. Piotr. and Colors by Nico Guardia. And this is the fucking weirdo near future sci-fi book about what if you could be inside someone's brain at the same time as them.
What if you could come into someone's brain?
Fucking yes, exactly. And in this, so our sort of protagonist rather than hero is this sort of tech genius billionaire guy who's come up with a technology to transfer your consciousness into someone else's brain, and a woman has been transferred into his body and she's trying to take it over because her body has died of cancer. So it's the war between the two people in his head as she tries to find a new body for herself, and she starts propositioning prostitutes to try and get them to come back to the place so that she can steal their bodies. This is like a really clever, weird psychological drama, and I think it's really great. I think Black Mask are publishing some really weirdo shit, and I really like it.
Cool.
You stopped reading this?
Yeah, I don't know why.
Weird.
I mean, probably because I read too many other comics.
Yeah, it's freaky as all hell, and if you don't like body horror, I wouldn't recommend it, but it's really clever.
Well, I do like body horror, and I'm going to steal this issue and read it tonight.
It's great.
Finally, Vampironica returned for its third issue, written by Greg Smallwood and Meg Smallwood, with art by Greg Smallwood. And this is the Archie Universe horror book that asks the question, what if Veronica was a vampire?
But also a vampire hunter.
Yes.
Like Blade.
Yeah.
What if Veronica was Blade?
I got confused. I was hoping that this was also the book where Betty's family is a long line of werewolf hunters, but it's not.
Because I feel like they almost made reference to that in the first page.
Yep.
This is the Archie horror comics toe that fine line of being like, oh, is this just like some cheesy, like dumb, gimmicky bullshit? And some of them are, and some of them are amazing. And I think this is an amazing series. I fucking love Greg Smallwood. His art is so
like, good.
Gorgeous.
Yep.
The girls are so beautiful.
Yep.
All of the outfits are amazing. The facial expressions are like specific and clear and expressive. I fucking love it.
Veronica's hair in this book as well. I love.
Like, yes.
Such a good hairstyle.
I'm always like, I always am tempted to take like various comic books into the hairdresser to be like, can you make my hair look like
this?
It's a drawing. I know it's a drawing, but is that possible? Do you know what I mean? But it's just, this is my favorite Archie book.
Also featuring my favorite panel of the week, the final panel in which Veronica saves Betty's life by crashing her car into a vampire. And then gets out of the car and says, hey girl, I can just tell from your face what you're thinking, and yes, this is a new look, thanks for noticing. So good.
And she's got vampire teeth.
So great.
It's really good. It's funny but also scary, and so gorgeously illustrated. I love how his like, it looks like pencils.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, yeah. This
I'm assuming that's a digital effect, but it works. It feels very like tactile and textural.
We've had a few Archie horror books since Afterlife and Sabrina that haven't quite been at that level of goodness.
This one definitely is. Yes, absolutely. Jughead the Hunger, you can give it a miss. But this one is essential.
Definitely. Well, Siobhan, another perfect episode.
Perfect!
And the final perfect episode recorded live at King's Comics Pitt Street Address. Again, you can now catch King's Comics in Sydney at 403 George Street.
Yes, we'll be open on Wednesday. You did it. You nailed it.
This Wednesday. Holy shit.
Yeah, I know.
Just in time for New Comic Book Day.
Yeah. We're reopening on shipment day because we hate ourselves.
And this week gives us like 16 number one issues.
It's a really big week too.
Including a new Archie series called Archie 1941.
Oh God, I don't care about that.
Blood Realm, Cemetery Beach, Exilium, Iceman, Joe Gollum, Low Road West, MCNLXXV. I'm sure that's Roman numerals for something. Let's take a guess. 104. Moth and Whisper. It's definitely not 104. Mystery Science Theater 3000. Newbery and Hobbs. Welcome to Wonderland. Wildstorm. Oh, no, sorry. Wrong Earth. Those are all the number one issues coming out next week.
I don't want to read any of those.
Some of them sound okay. I can't remember what any of them are about, but guess what's exciting?
What is?
Headlopper returns next week.
Ah!
And a few other good things.
Yeah, cool.
Also, Journey into Mystery, Birth of Krakoa, number one.
That could be fun. Cool.
Interesting.
Krakoa is a funny character.
Siobhan, if you want to get in touch with the show, you personally, you can email yourself at seriousissues@kingscomics.com. You can also follow yourself on Twitter.
And I can ignore my own emails from myself. I don't ignore emails. I just sometimes forget to check.
We are at serious_issues on Twitter, or Siobhan, CBG, and at LevDog individually. Of course, our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/seriousissuespodcast. See you there or at the new King store.
Yeah, come say
George
hi.
Street. I'm just going to hang out there. I can't wait to see the new digs.
Yeah, I'm really excited. It's going to be really cool. It's like a cool new location for us.
Yeah, and plus they're going to start selling food there now.
Oh, man.
Can you imagine? Food and comics, together at last.
George would have an actual fucking breakdown. There are a couple of comic book stores. Like, there's a comic book store in the States that's like a coffee shop / comic book store. And I'm always like, that's cool. But also, people would be touching the comics with their greasy hands.
Greasy pizza and comics.
Together at last.
Where it's like, it's only CGC graded comics. And you're like, yeah, you touch them and they just lose value. And that's how you pay your bill.
That sounds good.
Yep. Anyway, thanks so much for listening, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.